Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Boy, I can't wait to get to Vegas, and of course, remember what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas next week, actually starting on February 17th. The IFA convention is again back at the MGM Grand. Really looking forward to seeing a lot of franchise friends and colleagues, as well as always looking forward to making new ones. Really should be a great event. If you've yet to register, please go to the IFA website, franchise.org. And if you're not yet a member, please remember that there's a great opportunity for new franchisor members, that if you sign on for a two-year membership, you get free access to the IFA conventions. So really, that is for the first two IFA conventions, I should clarify that. So anyway, really good. A lot of things going on. As you know, Franchise Today is a production of Franchise Foundry, since the merger between Franchise Foundry and Franchise Essentials and Franchise Essentials Media Group. Always excited to mention our strategic partner in marketing and PR, Fishman Public Relations, the folks at Fishman, and specifically Brad and Sherry Fishman, Deborah Vilkas, and Sarah really has done a great job helping us promote Franchise Today. Matter of fact, we had a press release go out. I think it hit the national wires today, and I really appreciate all their efforts. Upcoming events, again, the IFA convention, February 17th through the 20th in Vegas at the MGM Grand. There's a tweet up on Saturday night, February 16th, sponsored by my good friends at Engage One-to-One. That's in the MGM bar down in the bowels of the MGM hotel. We always joke about that. Then next month in March 13th to the 16th, the Franchise Unconference in Park City, Utah. And then at the end of the month, we'll be back in Vegas for the Multi-Unit Franchise Conference put on by Franchise Update. This week starts our new Voices of Franchising series, and as many of you are already aware, we have changed up the format of Franchise Today. We're working through multi-segment series. We just finished the marketing series as our first series of the year, and a really, really great response and a lot of super comments about the series. Not only was the content just absolutely fabulous and professionally delivered, but the people that were on, and specifically CEO from Postnet, Steve Greenbaum, and Jeremy LeDuc, CEO at Elements Local, followed up by Steve Baxter, Senior VP of Worldwide Sales at SetMatrix, and then last week, a good friend, Sandy Lechner from SproutLoud. And all those segments are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. I'd like to also report that we are making considerable progress with our website, the new Franchise Today website, as well as a blog. And the ultimate goal is to be able to summarize each of these interviews on a weekly basis and get them up on the website as well. Also, with the merger, Franchise Today was one of the media elements, and another one that Franchise Essentials and myself had co-founded was FranSummit.com, along with Jeremy LeDuc and the folks at Elements Local. And look for some exciting information coming about France Summit, our third annual Franchise Social Media Summit. We're trying to get that information out ahead of the IFA convention. And as I mentioned, the Voices of Franchising series will run all the way through February. We really felt that it was just super appropriate to talk about franchising and all the respected voices in franchising. And the ones that we've picked out for this series, we really believe gives a lot of different perspective, all focused around franchising, but obviously from different angles, and looking forward to insight and opinions and recommendations and suggestions and thoughts throughout this series. Starting today, I have Joe LaBacher as my guest, and many of you know him and love him as the Franchise King, and We'll introduce him here in a second. This Tuesday, we have a special event in the series. Nick Powells of No Limit Agency, formerly No Limit Media Consulting, will be on, and will be on live at 11 a.m. on Tuesday the 12th as a special event, talking about his newest venture, 1851 Magazine, which really is a unique perspective in franchising, and they're ready to launch their print publication of 1851 Magazine to coincide with the IFA. So I really appreciate Nick and what must be a very busy schedule being on Tuesday. Originally, we had him scheduled to lead off this series kind of as a transition from marketing into the voices of franchising, but I'm really excited that he was able to schedule a special event for us. And that will lead into 2 days later. Steve Caldera, another unbelievably busy guy in franchising, will be my guest at 11 a.m. next Thursday on Valentine's Day, just a few days ahead of the IFA convention. So one can only imagine what his schedule must be like. And then the Thursday, as the IFA convention finishes up, I'll still be in Vegas, and I'll be broadcasting with Nancy Weingartner, the executive editor of Franchise Times. She'd kind of give us an overview of what went on at the convention, as well as a lead into some of the events that Franchise Times will be involved in, such as the Franchise Finance series or Franchise Finance event, and I believe that's also in Vegas in April. And then we're going to wrap up with Therese Silkin from Franchise Update, the co-founder of the Franchise Update Media Group, and really exciting to talk to her coming out of the IFA event, and then also looking forward to the multi-unit franchising event that Franchise Update produces in Vegas in March. So really just a lot of different perspective, and we're really excited. And then just a peek ahead in March to coincide with the multi-unit franchising event. We'll be having a two-part series on multi-unit franchising. We'll be announcing guests here in the next week or so, as well as a two-part series on franchise finance. April and May will be our fourth annual franchise legal series, and we've expanded it. If you remember, 4 years ago, we were a four-part series. The last 2 years, a seven-part series. This year, we've expanded it again to eight parts, and it will culminate with a recap of the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington in late May. In June, we have two-part series scheduled. One will be technology and franchising, and the other will be about franchise development as we lead into the summer. And as I've been mentioning, and feel it's important to mention again, you know, we typically have taken a break during the summer, but because of popular demand, we will not this summer. Instead, we will do I believe it's 8 or 9 part franchisor spotlight series. And again, this is not to promote a particular brand as much as it is to share some of the best practices that these brands and founders are using to make their brands mega brands, to use a good friend Lonnie Helgeson's term, and successful brands. And we've already got some people scheduled, including Dina Dwyer Owens, the CEO at the Dwyer Group, on July 11th. And then, of course, towards the end of the year, as September, we're going to focus around the Public Affairs and Leadership Conference by the IFA in Washington. Then in October and November, we'll be talking about franchise leadership, and again, a big segment on franchise sales, and those will be around the IFA, the Franchise Update Leadership Conference that is, I believe, in Buckhead, and then the West Coast Franchise Expo as well. And then December, we're going to recap, and we have an entire year filled up and have already started planning some special events as we did last year. In August, we had the Dealmaker Summit with Susan Blackbeth. It was a great special event. So we're going to have approximately 8 or 10 special events during the year, including the first one this Tuesday with Nick Powells. And so that'll be approximately 60 live shows throughout the year. And, of course, all the shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. But enough about that. Let's talk a little bit about today's guest, the franchise king, Joe LaBava. He's also the author of Become a Franchise Owner, courtesy of Wiley Publishing. He's on a mission to create a new generation of super successful franchise owners. He provides much-needed advice to individuals interested in franchise ownership with his top-notch advisory services to the masses via his award-winning franchise blog at franchiseking.com/blog, the oldest, the most experienced blogger in the franchise community. In addition, he works with a select number of franchisors, of course, helping them to boost their marketing efforts. His newest project is the Franchise Biz Director, and Joe will be talking about that. And while on the show, you could also see some of our Twitter activity going on through at Fran News Radio and, of course, at Paul Segretto. And if you want to contact Joel through Twitter, at Franchise King or at Joel LaBava. Joel, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul. It's like deja vu.
I know, actually, and I shouldn't say welcome, or welcome back to Franchise Today. As many of you probably recall, Joel and I, for a short while, worked together, kind of dubbed this the pasta and bagel hour in franchising, and a little bit
right.
tongue-in-cheek. But that's what it seems like, ages and ages and ages ago.
Yeah, it probably was. It was a couple of years.
At least a couple of years. And so anyway, but it's good to have you back on the show. And really, you know, I had some people ask and say, you know, Joe LaBava, you know, is he a voice in franchising? And of course, I say he's one of the most prominent voices in franchising. Number one, being the oldest, and I don't mean age-wise as much as I do experience, the oldest blogger in franchising. So kind of got here first and spreading the word around, but also from a different perspective of working with people that are exploring franchising. Of course, your book is a big part of that, and I know you provide advisory services to individuals that are exploring franchising. And really, I think it's unfair at this point to even classify them as candidates as much as I would classify them as interested parties. So let's start this in a progressive fashion, Joel. You know, blogging and franchising, you know, where were you at that point? What made you start blogging? How has that evolved?
That's it's pretty cool how it happened. I was involved in the Cleveland area small business scene, and there was a lot of local blogs that were kind of up and running in Cleveland. And, you know, I wasn't a writer, and I was kind of nervous about starting one. But a friend of mine, George Nemeth, who recently moved out to California, was one of the first business bloggers in Northeast Ohio. And I really liked what he was doing. I started to throw comments on there. And he said, Joel, man, you should start a blog. I'm like, you know, I can't really write. You know, I don't know. And then we met for coffee and some breakfast, and he convinced me to do it. And he said, just start writing, man. Just start writing. So that's what I did. And the reason that I did it was to, early on, separate myself from other people in franchising and to build credibility. No one was doing it, and I thought that I knew that the Internet was going to get really, really big. This was like 7 years ago, 8 years ago. I knew it was going to get big. I wasn't sure how it was going to grow, but I knew that if I had my own voice and I injected my own personality into it, that the writing would just naturally get better. So that's how I started, and I've been having a blast. It has been an absolute game changer for me.
Well, that's awesome, and you have spent time in franchising prior to that in franchise brokerage. So it's not like you came out of nowhere and just said, hey, franchising, there's a hot spot. Let me jump into it.
Yeah, right. It's not like I already owned a hardware store and decided, well, let's talk about franchising. You know, it didn't happen like that.
Right. So you started out, and then at some point somebody dubbed you the Franchise King. If you would, just tell us that brief story, and then let's get into the meat of what we want to talk about today.
It's so funny because a lot of the people that interview me on some of the bigger websites and magazines and stuff, you know, always start out, and then we talk to the self-proclaimed Franchise King. I'm not self-proclaimed. Someone called me that, you know. I was at a huge event in Cleveland several years ago, and one of the executive director of the largest chamber of commerce in Ohio saw me across the room at this event, and he yelled out at the top of his lungs, "Hey, it's the Franchise King." And I said, I think that's kind of cool. So my friend Jim Kukral, who's a huge online marketer, and he's doing a lot of stuff with self-published books right now, he said, "Joel, dude, trademark that name." So I did. Got an attorney, got that thing trademarked pretty quick. And, you know, the fact that I had the earliest blog around, and now I have a name that is, some people think it's catchy, it's really helped. So I'm glad I trademarked it. And that's how the story came about. I'm not the self-proclaimed. Someone called me the king.
That's a really good story. So you got to the point, you wrote a book and explained how that evolved and, of course, how this ties into your advisory services. And then we'll talk a little bit about the perspective of interested parties.
Oh, it's a real exciting story. I actually wrote a book review for a gentleman by the name of David Siteman Garland, who owns Rise to the Top, which is a really cool video blog. And I wrote the book review of his book. He sent it to me. I wrote it. And his editor sent me an email. He said, "I really liked your writing. I like the way you wrote the review. I like the way you inject your personality and an attempt at humor into it. And we are overdue for a book on franchising. Are you interested?" Let me think about it. Yes.
Yes.
Of course. I mean, it's what I've been leading up to. You know, 2 years before I signed the book deal, I was thinking to myself, you know, there's a lot of people getting book deals. I better start really lining myself up to do that. So I did it. And the best way to get a book deal is to have a publisher reach out to you.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And they did.
So. And that's through Wiley.
Wiley gave me an advance. You know, it took about 2 months to negotiate the contract, gave me an advance, and I started writing away. And, you know, this is a guy, me, I mean, I never even graduated college. I never took a formal journalism course. But I've been writing, you know, I have 1,500 articles I've written. So I got good enough where I was able to do it. And then, you know, they have really good editors. So, you know, maybe I used too many commas, but they fixed that.
And the name of that book is Become a Franchise Owner.
The Startup Guide to Lowering Your...
Yeah, there you go.
Owning what you do and all that fun stuff. Yeah, so it's been great. The book's been out a little over a year. It's doing very well. And it's amazing how many people email me and call me. "Hey, I just read your book. I love it." It's fantastic.
Well, it is a good book, and I have read it, and I've referred it to some people interested in franchising. You're welcome. The thing is, Joel, you know, working with interested parties, and I know through your advisory services, you have people that, you know, contact you that are at various levels of their exploration. I won't even call it due diligence at that point. One key question I think that has to answer is, what is the general perception of franchising by these people that first approach you about looking at a franchise opportunity?
That it's really expensive and that they're not sure how to really choose one that can be successful.
Okay.
Those are really the two things, and they're obviously a fear of losing money.
Well, I would imagine, especially coming out of the economic downturn that we did, a lot of people
are
fearful of that. I know working with some candidates and more since the merger with Franchise Foundry, working with a lot more candidates across various brands, and unlike other recessions where people made some high interest levels and then saw that kind of stop. So they took their windfall, if you would, their gains, and said, okay, well, I think I'll invest it in a business, knowing that they had the thought that they were playing with found money and it wasn't affecting their principal. And they knew there was risk involved. And even though people today know there's risk involved and definitely should understand there's risk involved, they're still of the mindset that failure is not an option, because a lot of times they are tapping into that principle. Equity in homes has dropped. So the people that come to you and say, you know, Joel, I've looked at this, I've got my finances in order, I'm ready to go, I'm definitely capitalized. I mean, how do you advise those people that have such a cocksure attitude that, you know, they have the necessary financing to move forward?
Well, it's funny because, you know, I'm a recovering franchise broker. And when I was doing really well in brokerage, talk about found money. I mean, you know, people were coming to the table with $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in home equity sitting there ready to rock, and they were getting loans at 4%, you know. So it was a little more painless to say, okay, I can take $50,000, $60,000 of my home equity. I have $50,000 in cash. I can go to the bank for the rest and do it. It was a lot easier back then. Now a lot of people have very little equity. It's harder to get a loan. And unless you have a fairly good percentage of your own money coming into the picture, you know, it's still been a challenge. And I know that the IFA and some committees are really trying to press these banks. The president's been trying for years. Karen Mills from the SBA. I mean, everyone's pressing, but the banks still are not loosening up that much. It's a little better. But, you know, so what do I tell people? I tell people that, you know, over 3,000 opportunities to choose from. And I understand that, you know, you're coming from this at different points. You know, I have some people, Paul, that I work with that have been looking at a franchise for 2 months and found me towards the end of their discovery process. And they actually are real candidates. And they're just like, oh, man, you know, Joel, I've been watching, you know, I've read your blog. I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything. So I can kind of jump in then, but also there's the people you talked about, the people that just want to explore. And you know, what do I tell them? I tell them to go slow. And I tell them that a loan may be a little hard to get right now, so be patient. And I just kind of just try to walk them through the process of, you know, what a franchise really is. And you know, if you're really prepared to what my late father called, are you prepared to own what you do?
Right. So, you know, and you know how I feel about owning what you do. I've developed the program Goya, which is get off your ass. Too many times a franchisee makes an investment. They feel it's a substantial investment, and they can just sit back and make things work. And they need to own what they do. They need to get off their ass. They need to make it happen, and we could talk hours and hours on that aspect. You know, in your book, in Chapter 3, you have Take the Franchise Quiz. What are some of your thoughts behind that, and how do you lead some of the individuals that you're meeting with in the direction of taking the franchise quiz?
It's funny. I don't even remember how I came up with the idea, but about 5 years ago, I said, you know what? I need to make a free quiz for people, because so many people come to me and ask me if they're right for franchising, or they come to me and I start kind of asking them some questions, and I say to myself, self, this person needs to get a new job or start their own business from scratch, because they are going to not make it in franchising because of their personality. You know, they want to fight. They don't want to listen. They don't want to follow rules. They want to do their own thing. They want to really take control of everything. So I said to myself, I've got to try to help people not waste time if they're not right for it. So I came up with Take the Franchise Quiz. It's a free online quiz. It takes about 10 minutes for someone to do. And I have to tell you, I was, you know, over the summer, you and I were both featured in Entrepreneur Magazine. And they linked to that quiz. So that website has been getting bombarded with people wanting to fill out the quiz. So I'm usually a couple days behind because I grade these quizzes. I score them personally. I refuse to do it with some type of automation. So I grade each one at a time, and it takes a while. And that's okay because it's worth it. That's part of, you know, what I feel I need to do. I want to make sure that, you know, that only the right people are looking at franchises. So recently, as a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, I made the decision to only accept quizzes from North America because it was getting to the point that I was getting them from other parts of the world where I really can't help anyone, you know, figure out the whole franchise thing. And maybe if I wanted to and I really dug in, I wanted to learn more about the international markets, I could. But you know what? I don't have time. I just don't. So my best use is helping people, you know, really in the United States and Canada. So hopefully the volume will come down. But it's really a helpful tool for people. And, you know, franchisors that are listening, send people over to it. You know, let's find out.
Right. Maybe what you ought to do is a second book should be Become a Franchise Owner International Style. You know, Joe, what I really liked about the book is you gave the pros and the cons. Too many times we read about all the fluff, all the great things, all the wishes, hopes, and dreams. And I like the way you pointed out in one of the chapters, you know, what franchising isn't. And, of course, we spend a lot of time in profiling, you know, the ideal franchise candidate. And I know a lot of people that, you know, go through this process and really believe that franchising is right for them and also have a what could be described as a misconception that they're right for franchising. And too many people these days throw around the term entrepreneur. So in your opinion, are franchisees entrepreneurs, and do entrepreneurs make good franchisees?
It's kind of a loaded question, but I'll take it because it's an important one. My father always told me that he always said, Joel, you see things in black and white. You never see the gray area. Well, he was right. But in my view, franchisees are not entrepreneurs, and a pure entrepreneur should never, ever become a franchisee. The real entrepreneur is the person that came up with a concept in the first place and is the one awarding franchises. I mean, if you open up an ice cream franchise or a frozen yogurt franchise, just how creative do you think you're going to be able to be? How entrepreneurial are you going to be when you do that? I mean, are you going to come up with new flavors? No, you're not going to have time. And even if you did, the franchisor might not even look at it. I mean, you're there to move ice cream, to move yogurt, to create an atmosphere. So, you know, it's not very entrepreneurial to own a franchise. However, there are entrepreneurial things that might have to do with marketing and relationship building and local community, you know, activity that you can get involved in that you can definitely, you know, be a little entrepreneurial. But, I mean, I see it in black and white. I believe that the franchisor is the true entrepreneur.
So some people would say that when there's financial risk, that in and of itself is an entrepreneurial trait or characteristic, or better defined probably, is that it is a entrepreneurial function. So, I mean, I have a lot of the same thoughts with respect to entrepreneurship, and of course, then there's that big defining line between, you know, the larger food service type brands and everybody else in franchising. And of course, I would have to say that there are some entrepreneurs, and maybe they've grown into entrepreneurs, you know, the likes of, you know, of owning 100 or 150 or 200, you know, Kentucky Fried Chickens and Taco Bells and Pizza Huts. I mean, obviously, they're looking at a much broader scope than the franchise candidate coming in looking to buy, you know, one location where they're going to be pretty much the primary employee behind the counter dealing with customers. So it's really an interesting debate. One that, as you know, I've gone through time after time after time in LinkedIn and on my blog. And I think that your dad might be right in this situation, that there is a big gray area.
Mm-hmm. You know, here's what I really dislike, though. When I see franchisors marketing their opportunity as an entrepreneurial venture, that to me is wrong, because it really
mm-hmm.
isn't. It really isn't. It goes in the same well as a turnkey operation, which you know, my visual and most people's visual of a turnkey means I turn the key and I'm in business. So those are a couple terms that I really dislike, and you won't find me using them when I work with franchisors and help them, you know, spread their message.
Sure. And of course I know where your reference with respect to, you know, this is an entrepreneurial opportunity. And I think the better term in some of those instances is an enterprise building opportunity, where
yeah.
obviously they have a bigger area, they have a way to
yeah.
grow, they have multi-unit ownership. So I agree with you. There is a distinct difference. It's just ironic that the Franchise 500 is published by a magazine with the title Entrepreneur.
Right, right.
So in Chapter 6 of your book, it's titled Search for a Franchise Without Searching for a Franchise. What are your thoughts behind that?
That's funny. That's what I have it open to. I have the book sitting here with me. One of many that I have in my library of the same book. No, it's important to make some lists. And for anyone that's listening to this who's possibly going to buy a franchise someday, instead of going to some of the really good franchise websites like Franchise Direct, you know, franchise.com, you know, franchise.org, the IFA site is really good. Instead of starting there and kind of getting lost and finding yourself 5 hours later staring at the computer screen and you didn't know it was 5 hours later, why don't you take a look at yourself? Turn off all the electronics, darn it. Take it easy. Take a couple days and figure out who you are. You know, what are you really good at? What do you bring to the table? Are you a strong operations person? Are you creative? Are you a sales superstar? What are you really good at? And then do another list. What are some of the personal quirks that you have? You know, are you laid back or are you outgoing? Are you aggressive? You know, what's important to you? Do you want to really contribute to your local community and give back? Is that one of the reasons why you want to start a business? So once you have those two lists, then you can go online and start searching for opportunities that match that. I mean, you know, one of the biggest mistakes I see are people that look at a food franchise because they think that they're good with people. Paul, I've worked with so many people that have said, yeah, I want to get in a food franchise. You know, I'm really good working with people. I like schmoozing, you know. I want to go out and, you know, pass samples around at lunch. Okay, that's fine. But what is your role really going to be? You know, so I really
right.
invite people to dig in deep to find out what the role is going to be. But it's important to start with yourself before you start looking, because that is how a mismatch can be made if you don't do that.
We are live on Franchise Today. My guest today is Joel Lobava, the Franchise King and author of Become a Franchise Owner. And Joel, for the people that you speak with that have gone through the process of looking at a franchise and for whatever reason decided not to pursue a franchise, what is their perspective about franchising when they've pretty much, you know, come to a dead end in their exploration process?
Well, when they work with me, they first say thank you. And a lot of them say, you know, I wasn't really sure, but after talking with you, I can see what you mean, that I'm probably not right for franchising. A lot of the people admit at the end of their discovery process of, you know, even beginning to look at one, that, yeah, they don't really want to follow the rules. and they were kind of hoping to buy into a system so, you know, maybe they can make money faster or they didn't have to think of everything. But they really don't like rules, and it probably wouldn't have worked out too well anyway. I hear that a lot.
So, you know, there are people within franchising, and franchisors in particular, that think that Joe Lovava, the franchise king, doesn't like franchising. What do you say to that?
I say I wouldn't be in franchising if I didn't like franchising. I'm an independent voice, you know. I say what's on my mind. There are franchisors out there who award franchises to people that probably shouldn't have been awarded franchises to begin with. And I try to prevent that by teaching candidates, first of all, how to find a good franchisor and how to ask great questions, and by working with a couple franchisors and really, really hammering on them to be careful who they choose. Because especially a young franchisor, if you're a young franchisor, you have 5 or 6 units, you invested $150,000 in franchise development, you're spending $5,000 to $10,000 a month in marketing, and you haven't sold a franchise in 6 months, all of a sudden someone is waving a $35,000 check in your face for a franchise fee. I mean, human nature comes into play here. Man, we really need to sell a franchise. But, you know, the younger franchisors especially don't look past their nose when it comes to this and have a potential to award a franchise to someone that in a year's time is going to be out of business because their financials were suspect. You know, they might have enough money. I'm not sure. Hopefully it'll work out kind of attitude. They're a little feisty. I don't know if they're really going to follow the rules. I mean, all the things that franchisors are generally trained on when they're looking to award franchises kind of goes out the window when business is tough. So I really, really am on both sides of the table here. I want only the qualified franchisees to buy franchises. I want them to be financially qualified. I want them to have the right personal traits and just have enough going for them so they can be successful. And on the other side of the table, I really encourage franchisors to take a step back before they award a franchise because we don't want high failure rates. I mean, the best thing that can happen is that the failure rates go down because of what I'm trying to do. And I understand that some franchisors think that I'm anti-franchise. And you know what? The franchisors that really get it never say that. They say, you know what? Darn it, he's right. And you know how I know that, Paul? Because I have people from the IFA that have been in the IFA for a long time quietly email me and tell me, Joel, you're on the right track. Keep up the good work.
Right.
So, you know, some people won't like some people for whatever reason, no matter what, you know, and that's okay. There's people that I don't like, but that's my problem, you know.
Sure.
I mean, that's the mature way to look at it, but my heart is in the right place, even though I'm not always politically correct. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I, too, am very much a believer of very methodical franchise growth, bottom-up profitability before growth that leads to growth, strong franchise system with strong unit economics. And kind of what you were mentioning, I refer to sell the franchise and bang your main theory, which is when they're progressing along and all of a sudden, nothing against Bang or Main, if we have any listeners from Bang or Main, but all of a sudden you get this call and somebody waving a check, like you said, all of a sudden you get a $35,000 check that the franchisor, you know, probably desperately needs at this point.
Right.
And it certainly could use it. And they go ahead and award a franchise in Bang or Main. And even taking everything out of the equation with respect to it being a qualified candidate, financially qualified, operationally qualified,
mm-hmm.
from a franchisor standpoint, they can't possibly support them the correct way and will probably never have a mass of their brand up in that area, and it really doesn't make sense. And too many times, you know, we do see it, we have seen it, and we've seen franchisors have to scale back and relaunch or rededicate their efforts and basically cluster out of their backyard. And I think what happens in those situations, and I think this is where it's some of the problem is with portals, is that we wind up with these leads, and I believe a problem in franchising, and I believe that is changing, is that the typical franchisor sells franchises to people they shouldn't have because they fell in their lap, instead of concentrating the time on working with the qualified franchise candidates at that point. And I think because it's just easier. You know, a couple of weeks ago with three different franchisors that I talked with, and I think you'll find this interesting, and you and I haven't talked about this yet. The founder that I was talking with, and we're talking about emerging brands, uh-huh. basically said, you know, I'm fine with our franchise sales process, and I'm really fine with the people selling our franchises. And some of them were using internal staff, and some were using brokers, and some were using a right. combination. And I said to the three of them, and each of them, I think, had three different people that were working in this regard, I said, I would like to prepare a 20-question multiple-choice test based on your FDD, not counting the legal mumbo-jumbo in it.
Right.
Cold, hard facts that should be shared with a franchise candidate. And I would bet you a dime to a donut, based on a scale of 70% passing, that most of them will not pass. I had these three franchisors take me up on it.
Yeah.
Very simple test, Joel. They all, across the board, got the answer right, and it was the only question they all got right together. How much is your franchise fee?
Huh.
Out of nine, eight failed. Eight
wow.
failed. Didn't know what was in their own FDD. And I'm talking about range of investment. If there was a variable, God forbid if there was a variable, a population variable for an area, hardly
uh-huh.
any of them knew it. Some didn't know if there were discounts or a discounted franchise fee for multiple units for their second and third one. A lot of them didn't even know beyond the founder and the president of the company, other people that might be listed in the disclosure document. It was horrific.
Wow.
It was horrific. And unfortunately, I think that is probably more the norm than the exception. And, you know, word of advice to, you know, founders, of, especially of emerging brands, but basically to all founders, you know, really get your inner house in order. It's for your benefit as well as for the benefit of the franchise candidates that eventually become franchisees. You know, Joel, you wrote a great article today. I noticed it on the SBA site. Tell us a little bit about it because, you know, running into franchise candidates, a lot of times they're like, why can't you tell me this information? So kind of just give us a little bit of insight into that article today and give us the web address where people could go see it.
Sure, sure. You're talking about the one at SBA.gov?
That's correct.
Yeah, I write for the Small Business Administration. I write a monthly column for them for franchising. And the one that I published yesterday morning, interestingly enough, Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate radio station guy, called me last night, and he had me on his show early this morning as he read it, and he wanted to discuss it. It was about franchisees that really don't know that there are certain restrictions that franchises have. And it's about all the restrictions that a franchise has, things like where you can buy your products or services, how the size of your location. If you're going to own if you're going to open a retail location, a retail space, you can't look at 2,500 square foot places if the franchisor is telling you between 1,200 and 1,500 square feet. There's restrictions on the size of the signs, the colors you could use. There's all sorts of things, and a lot of people that are looking at franchises really don't realize that. But as I said this morning on Jim's show, it's not like franchisors, are coming from some evil empire somewhere far away in the other part of the galaxy. I mean, it's to make things uniform. And that's why there's restrictions on things. You know, if you open up a Dunkin' Donuts, you're not allowed to sell magnetized signs that go on cars, you know, and run a little sign shop out of there. Yeah, you're allowed to sell donuts, you know. So there are restrictions on products and services, but it's all for a reason.
How do you respond to franchise candidates that say, Joe, before I, make a decision to buy a franchise, I really need to know how much money I'm going to make? How do you respond to them?
I tell them that there may be some income or gross or net sales information in the document, the FDD, that you're going to get, but don't expect it. And even if it is in there, it doesn't matter to me, because I want you to call 10 to 15 existing franchisees of the concept that you're really interested in, and even try to find some of the former franchisees and ask them. And I teach them how to ask the question without sounding, that one article I wrote, without sounding like, you work for the IRS. Because believe it or not, some franchisees are really paranoid. I mean, they're really paranoid. They think that the candidates that are calling them are like from the IRS or something. So you have to be careful how you ask the question. But that's where the answers are. The answers come from the franchisees.
So
that's
really,
what I tell them. You'll find out, okay? I understand you want to know how much you're going to make. It's a very popular question. I understand. You'll find out. Just hang there with me. And that's what I do.
It really is a difficult situation, both for the franchisor and for the franchise candidate. Not being able to get some of that information. But, of course, we understand why that those type of disclosure requirements are in place, because God only knows if people were able to just wing it and say, you can make millions. Obviously, we can't have anything along those lines. In your book, I believe it's chapter 10, I believe, it all comes down to your franchise research. When a candidate, an interested party, comes to you, what is the primary point of research or primary research that you point them to? If you had to tell them one thing that they needed to research, what would that be?
It's all about calling and visiting franchisees. That is the most important part of the research, and to start calling them randomly and get some information.
So with that in mind, and I know you work with some select franchisors and you help them in various content marketing, how do you respond to them, or how do you advise them in this process about franchisees? And, of course, we like to refer to it as franchisee validation.
I just tell them to tell the truth. Just tell them what's going on. It's okay, I think, to mention a couple franchisees that they might want to call, because maybe they have some things in common. But you have to let these candidates do their thing. And don't worry if they're going to call franchisees randomly. You want them to, because, let's say that you have 10 candidates and all 10 of them ended up not buying the franchise. The worst thing that can happen is they didn't buy the franchise. You don't have any income coming in right now. The best thing that can happen is you can find out why the validation went wrong, because maybe there is a kink in the system. And that's a great way to find out if the franchisees will share what they've heard. And that's usually part of the process. They'll share it. They'll ask the franchise development representative. They'll share with them, I was talking to this Wyoming franchisee, and she was telling me that the location that you and her jointly picked out was terrible, and that she really expected you guys to have a real estate department that had their head together. You got to respond to them honestly. Find out what happened. Maybe the real estate connection in Wyoming was lousy, and that's how it happened. But you gotta be upfront about the stuff.
So, do you recommend to interested parties, and at this point, franchise candidates, do you recommend that even if they get negative information, that they should share it and further clarify it with the franchisor?
100% every time. Absolutely.
That to me is great, great advice, because the franchisor needs to know, probably wants to know, and nothing is worse than having what appears to be a good candidate all of a sudden fall out of the system,
out of the
sales process,
yeah,
because of a negative and not knowing what that negative might be, so that it, you know, can be addressed. Not to them, at least to see you know, what the problems might be, because I definitely agree, franchisee validation is absolutely paramount, and is just vitally important.
And guess what, Paul? As real quick, Paul, as you know, franchisees that are making money and are happy validate very well.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's part of the theory behind bottom-up growth and profitability.
That's right.
I mean, if franchisees are making money, they're happy, they're certainly going to sing praises about the brand and about the system. And, you know, at the end of the day, too, I think franchisees want to say good things about it, because if anything, it validates their own decision.
That's
and
right.
And number two, it creates more value in their business when and if there's a time that they want to get out and sell for whatever reason.
That's right.
They want to be able to have some buyers in the pipeline. So it's really to their benefit. So the key, obviously, is to get them to make money. We're live on Franchise Today with Joel LaBava, the Franchise King and author of Become a Franchise Owner. Joel, as we mentioned, you write for SBA.gov. What other publications or blogs do you currently submit articles to?
I write for FranchWire. I've seen you over there too. I write, of course.
Yeah.
I've been the expert in residence and franchise writer for Small Business Trends for, I think, like 5 years now, 6 years. I write the annual Franchise Trends article for that site every year, and I write an article every month. I've written on places like Open Forum, Huffington Post, Cox Small Business in Virginia, and I get offers all the time. But I'm a lot pickier now to where I write. I don't do as many unpaid guest posts as I used to. Heck, I've written over 1,500 articles. So, there comes that time where free just isn't there anymore. But once in a while, I'll write a guest post, you know, if it makes sense.
Right. Yeah, FranchWire, I'm really impressed with. I think they're getting a lot of traction, and I'll probably be contributing there a lot more. And I'm actually waiting for a final decision. FranchWire might be coming on as our news partner for
cool.
our Franchise Today, and hopefully that'll start next week. So that'll be really good. I really like Sherry
David's,
and everybody
nice.
Over there.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. Good people over there. Good information. Really exciting times in franchising. And again, you know, to mention, you have been working with some select franchisors. Tell us about that. I guess it's a new venture, although you've been working with franchisors for quite a while.
Yeah, I've been doing it for years. I wanted to expand my content network. I have opportunities for franchisors that want to be featured on the Franchise King blog for a month at a time. They get a couple articles. They get a nice big ad on the homepage. First time I've ever sold ads on the homepage, but it's really going over well. So I have a program like that. People can contact me for more information on that. It's really, really good for franchisors because they get on my newsletter, which is currently well over 2,000 subscribers now, and they get on the blog. And also, in that program, they get a platinum listing on my newest website, franchisebizdirectory.com. So it's kind of an all-in-one approach. The reason that I started franchisebizdirectory.com, basically because there aren't really any franchise directories, pure directories. Most of the sites are portals, and they're lead gathering machines. And that's fine. I mean, it works. But, and Paul, I don't know if you can help me or not with this. Most franchisors don't think about their websites and their search engine optimization. And here's a simple way for franchisors to look at this. There are hundreds of thousands of websites and blogs being created every week. Okay,
mm-hmm.
How are you going to stand out when the numbers keep getting bigger? So one way to do that, and Matt Cutts of Google has talked about this, that he says that sometimes it may make sense to get listed in niche web directories. Now, it makes perfect sense to me if you're in the franchise space, you'd want to be on a directory that has the word franchise in it. Now,
mm-hmm.
A lot of franchisors, though, tend to be a little short-sighted because they want leads. This directory will probably generate some leads, but it's a dual-purpose website. It's to generate leads, but more importantly, it's to make sure that they are indexed in all the search engines all the time. Because if you go to a web portal, the web portals don't point to your website. They point to their own website, and they have you fill out a form, you know, and that's how they get paid. You know, your candidates fill out a form. In this, they're going right to your website. So you're getting a link to your website. Your website may or may not have the word franchise in it, but I bet it has the word franchise very close to the top. Well, my website does have the word franchise in it. So when Google and Bing see that, it makes sense to those search engine spiders. So that's really why I created this. And people can buy one-year listings. I mean, they start at $59 for, you know, for a one-year listing. And I even put a special coupon together just for you, Paul.
And where can we access that coupon?
When you go to franchisebizdirectory.com and you submit your listing in the shopping cart, put in, all lowercase, put in franchise today, and you'll get 20% off any listing. There's three different levels, and they're pretty self-explanatory. And if you need help, you know, maybe doing some editing when you put your information in, you know, put it in as is, and contact me. You'll see it's easy to contact me, and I'll help you with the wording and stuff to make it keyword friendly. But put in franchise today. Wasn't that creative? Franchise today.
Very, very creative.
In the coupon code in the shopping cart, and I'll leave that coupon code in there as long as Paul says that I should.
Okay, I appreciate that, Joel. As always, I love talking to you. Great book, Become a Franchise Owner. Share it with your candidates. I really think, and I'm advising franchisors to do that, because I really think it helps in the process. Any parting thoughts, Joel?
Yeah, real quick, you know, it's funny you say that. Rick Nunnell, the CEO of Window Genie, called me and he said, Joel, send me a box of books, dude. I'm like, what? He said, I want like 12 books for my 12 area developers. And they had an area developer meeting, and they passed around my books and read them and took a picture of them, because Rick felt that area developers and anyone who's going to be involved in selling franchises should probably read the book, because it really talks deeply about people's fears when they're looking at buying a franchise.
Sure, absolutely. Joel, always my pleasure. Look forward to having you on again in the future.
Yeah, it was great to meet you in person, man.
Yeah, right.
Finally.
At the FBA conference. Yeah, that was great. All right, everybody, we're getting to the top of the hour. Just a reminder, next week, special edition of Franchise Today on Tuesday, February 12th. Nick Powell will be my guest, talking about 1851 Magazine and its new print launch. And then on Thursday, IFA CEO and President Steve Caldera will be my special guest just days ahead of the IFA convention. So anyway, until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.